This is QuakeCast episode 49. Welcome to the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired. This week we are welcoming Michael Markey. Michael is a composer of game music, a sound designer, a competitive player, and a Quake mapper. In this episode, Michael walks us through his journey from dealing with flaky musicians to composing for a multitude of projects, including the Quake Champions Pro League and many more. And if that wasn't enough, he's the composer of our new theme song. So thank you for that, Michael. And now, the interview. You're like this awesome musician, but you're also an amazing player, and I hate you. I mean, I'm like, no way you play like, what is it? Not platinum, but elite. Yeah, diamond. And then you're elite.
Yeah, I got up to elite in Quake Champions Duel.
Wow. That's sick. Okay, cool. So let's get started. So how did you get involved with video games, PC gaming, that kind of jazz?
So I would say that my earliest recollection as far as like my involvement with gaming had to probably be my dad had like an old 486 or something, I think. This was in the early 90s in our apartment. And then, you know, my dad had it mainly for work, right? Because he was like going to medical school and stuff like that. And so my uncle actually was the gamer, right? And he would come over and he would like, you know, he would bring me games to like check out and play. And that's actually how I got my first experience gaming. Was he gave me the Doom shareware CD-ROM, which I still have actually.
Nice.
I don't know if it works. I think it's like, it's so scratched, but yeah. So I remember like being 4 years old and like going into like DOS and, you know, doing the C:/doom.exe, you know, doing all that stuff. And yeah, so it was playing the Doom shareware was definitely my earliest recollection as far as gaming goes.
Nice. And then it was all downhill from there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I was that bad uncle for some of my nephews. And the first Quake level I ever made was for my nephew. You know, it's like, I'm going to make a level and I'm going to give it to you as a gift kind of thing.
Oh, that's really yeah, cool.
It was fun. I think he was 10 or something and he thought it was cool. It was a horrible level, but I was learning. But no, that's cool. So now the interesting thing when I read your bio is it seems like you got into music a little bit later in your life, right? So you're a gamer, you consume all these games, the Quake series, Half-Life, all that stuff. And then I guess Max Payne 2 is actually something that kind of jumped out at you and that's what inspired you?
Yeah, so I played all kinds of games, like, you know, RTS games, you know, first person shooters, etc., like everything. And so I remember the ending credits song for Max Payne 2, which is Late Goodbye by Poets of the Fall. It's just like this like sappy acoustic ballad that sort of like went with the, you know, movie film noir tone of the game, right? And I remember I just, for some reason, that song like really stuck out to me. It was like super catchy. I thought the guitar was super cool and it made me like want to learn how to play guitar. And I remember asking my mom for guitar lessons because my dad very, very briefly at one point in his life played some guitar at some point. And for my dad's 40th birthday, my grandpa, his father, got him a guitar. So we just had a guitar laying around the house. And yeah, I asked my mom to get me lessons. And, you know, I started taking lessons and then that didn't go so well.
Like, what?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's something about like structured learning, at least the way that learning was structured. It just did not. It was not conducive in like keeping me consistent in my engagement with the instrument and just in general, like, I don't know, like the sort of standard learning doesn't really work for me. Like, you know, study for 1 hour a day and, you know, run your scales to a metronome and do all that stuff. So like that didn't, I was sort of really unenthused once I got started, and then I broke my wrist. And so that just like made me quit pretty much because I was recovering.
Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah. And so I was quit completely. Right. And then Guitar Hero, came out, and then that sort of, I don't know, that was like 2004, I think. And that sort of like began like this like whole, like it was like a mini wave of like rock and metal sort of became popular again.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember that.
Yeah.
And it was directly because of Guitar Hero. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember like playing it, and then that was actually like my first exposure to metal proper. I mean, as embarrassing that is to admit, it was like,
well, you had MIDI metal in,
exactly. Doom, yeah.
But that's
yeah.
not the same thing, right?
Yeah. 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 Maybe Bobby Prince's sort of MIDI covers subconsciously influenced my taste. Yeah,
exactly.
Basically that came out, and that gave me my first exposure to what, you know, people will consider like real metal, right? Like real rock. Like there was like Pantera and like Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, all this stuff. So I started listening to that. And then, you know, that sort of got me into, you know, leapfrogging from that. I started listening to like Metallica and Megadeth and all those bands. And then immediately from those groups, from that like 80s sort of thrash metal era, I straight leapfrogged into like modern technical death metal. Which is quite the jump. And
yeah, a little bit.
yeah. Just because I was like so blown away by their musicianship, though. That was like the one thing that like really stuck out to me. I didn't care much for like the growl vocals at the time. It was just like all the crazy shredding that they were doing. I thought it was really cool. And I mean, that's what got me into the metal that was in Guitar Hero anyways. It's like the guitar solo from Cowboys from Hell and Bark at the Moon, I thought were like so cool. Like I was really, really into that level of musicianship. And then I sort of just kept looking for more and more and more. And then I started like practicing and learning how to play these solos and developing myself as a musician and, you know, join a high school band, etc. That whole deal.
Nice. Nice. So now, and then you got into production, and this cracked me up in your bio. I hope you don't mind, I read this.
Yeah, sure. I put that in there on purpose.
After working with musicians, I decided I did not want to deal with them as it's a nightmare. Which I laughed out loud when I read that because I don't have the same experience, but I'm definitely familiar with the concept of flaky musicians. But that's cool because that helps you. It helps with your composition. It helps with your structure, knowing the technical side of things, as opposed to just showing up and, you know, having someone drive the board. You can drive the board. And I think that's kind of more the way things are now with the accessible software and equipment and all that stuff.
Definitely.
But yeah. So tell me how that kind of, did that up your game? What did that give you?
So yeah, that definitely, I definitely learned a lot as far as working on projects that were not directly my own. So I had worked with a few like local metal bands, producing like album, like, you know, an album for them or singles or something like that, where they would come to my studio, my home studio, and you know, they would struggle to play their own music, and I would struggle to get them to record themselves struggling to play their own music. And it was quite an ordeal, especially like if you're coming at this with no prior experience. Like, well, to take it one step back. So I had worked with metal bands, and I also done some like pop work, and working with like pop music sort of forced me to learn a lot of like synth based stuff, and, you know, learning how to properly mix electronic music and, you know, create synth patches and do all this stuff. So it sort of expanded my palette past just the realm of distorted guitars and acoustic drums, right?
Right.
So that's, I actually owe like a big part in where I am today with my work in pop, however brief that was, because it forced me to learn a lot of stuff. And then because I was able to do that, I learned how to learn also. You know, that's like a big part about any field or any creative field, in my opinion, is one of the biggest hurdles that you need to get over is you need to learn how to learn your field. Right.
Right. Yeah, I get it.
Basically, the thing about working with musicians is that musicians, you have to like look at what the average musician is. And the average musician is someone who is just basically a hobbyist, right? But it's like their hobby, they want to be their life, like their main job. And a lot of times they're younger, and a lot of times they don't have a lot of money. And a lot of times, you know, they're like I said, they're young, they're irresponsible. And you as the producer sort of have like a role, almost like a parental role to them. Like you have to like be like, no, you can't do that. you know, you have to show up on time. You know, you have to, you know, where's your lunch money? You know, all this stuff, right? And it's really, I had a moment where like a moment of realization where I was like, man, you know, all like the majority of my clientele, like how far can I get in life if like my clientele are, you know, they can barely pay me, you know, like it's like I'm setting such a low ceiling on myself. And in terms of like, and that's just like financially, like looking at my future. And then on top of the fact of like the stress of needing to, account for flaky musicians, both in their scheduling and their payment and stuff. Like I've had guys be like, yeah, well, I don't have the money right now. Can I pay you later? And then I'm just like, well, I mean, you're here. You just showed up. You didn't even tell me that you don't have the money until you were here. You could have called me. You could have texted me, anything. You didn't do that. And this just happens multiple times until you realize that there's a pattern. And
Right.
So yeah, I figured like I really need to get out of that. I need to get out of that as soon as possible, and I need to do something a lot more fulfilling because my fuse with this would be really short. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So then you segued into like you. When did you realize you wanted like no? I'm going to do game music because you've obviously had a lot of success in a very short amount of time and. This is your trajectory right now, but when was that moment? Was it when the last guy forgot his lunch money?
So, I would say that like the biggest standout moment would be, so after I decided that I want to just compose on my own, right? I just wanted to make, you know, I don't want to record bands. I just want to record my own musical material. It just like solo musical material wasn't going to be tied to any project. So, I started working on some songs, and this was in 2016. So 2016, 2017, something like that. And, you know, Doom 2016 had just come out, and that soundtrack was, you know, incredible. And I was just playing Deus Ex Mankind Divided. And I just, there's something about like, you know, the whole concept of like transhumanism in that game that I always find really interesting. And I sort of like wanted to create a song sort of just inspired by that game and also sort of inspired by the sound of the Doom 2016 soundtrack, right? So I whipped up a song, worked on it for a few days, and then I posted it on my SoundCloud, and then I also posted it on the Doom subreddit, and I went to bed. And I was like, oh, here, I made like a little track inspired by the Doom soundtrack. I posted it on the subreddit, and I go to bed. I wake up the next morning and then I see like the video, or rather the song has like, you know, like hundreds, it just overnight got like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of views, which was a lot for me at the time. And all these likes and all these comments, like the actual post got like over 2,000 or 3,000 upvotes, I think. And then Mick Gordon commented on it, who is the composer of the Doom soundtrack.
Yeah, that helps right there, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was like a really, you know, like a kick in the butt moment for me. Because I was like, whoa, okay, people like this. I might be able to do this.
Nice.
And so I started working really hard at that, and then I made like a whole album of songs similar to that one. And then, you know, I was just sitting on this material. It's like, what do I do with this? I have this material. And then, you know, there's a group of modders, but one of them named DB Thanatos, he was working on a mod for Doom 2 called Quake Champions Doom Edition. And it's basically a retro port of Quake Champions back into Doom 2. And right. So I was like, hey, you need music? And I just like pitched him that soundtrack. He was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Yeah, put it in. And then we put it in. And so that was basically my first actual work on a game. So that's how that started.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny how instead of fans, I mean, you still have fans, but now it's communities, you know, and you interact with, it seems like musicians and creative people interact with communities and that's gotta be so satisfying to go in that short amount of time from like, hey, I'm just going to put together a song to, hey, someone liked my stuff enough to want it in their mod. And that particular mod definitely got attention for all kinds of different reasons, but that's just gotta be really satisfying. And so obviously, did you feel supercharged at that point, or was it still kind of like, well, let's see how this, you know, cause that's not money. There's no money involved, right? There's no money changing hands, but you're well on your way.
Yeah.
So talk about the Quake Champions just tracks then after that, cause you did 9 tracks for the characters, right? I love this idea that you came up with.
Yeah. So, I did that Quake Champions Doom Edition music, or yeah, whatever that album is considered. And I had this music, and then there were some Quake Champions streamer. There's a Quake Champions streamer. He's like one of the bigger ones named Zoot. He's like a caster slash commentator. And mm-hmm. so I noticed that he just sort of on his stream, he would always intro and outro his streams with this like sort of like stock drum and bass song. And I messaged him and I was like, hey, you know, do you want like a stream theme, like a proper custom one made for your stream? And he was like, yeah, sure. And so, you know, we worked out the details. Like I was offering to do it for free, but he insisted on paying me because I mean, he's just a good guy.
Nice.
And I honestly do believe in free work. I think that is a real thing. And I think it is helpful. You know, a lot of people will say like, you know, there's no such thing as working for exposure, blah, blah, blah. Always get paid for all your work. But like, I'm always like, I don't know if that's always true. But either way, that's a completely other tangent. So so I did his I did his extreme theme, right? And it was sort of a mix of, considering that he was primarily a Quake Champion stream at the time, I wanted to, and he sort of liked some of the electronic music that I did. I was like, huh, well, I should sort of mix this electronic stuff that he liked of mine with like some of the industrial metal stuff of that sort of Quake is known for. And so I made his stream theme, and basically that stream theme served as the DNA for all of the Quake Champions themes that I did, where it was like a blend of like industrial metal with like modern electronic elements and, you know, all these like different things. Like this was like the base that I sort of jumped off of. And so at the time that this was happening was like March of 2018. Quake Champions only had, right now Quake Champions has 2 sets of soundtracks, one by Chris Vrenna and one by Andrew Holschult. So at the time, the Holschult soundtrack was unknown, like, and it was not in the game. So it was just the Vrenna soundtrack, and the Vrenna soundtrack was like really sort of like low key and like not that hype in parts. And people, you know, people like were echoing like, "Hey, we want like, you know, more hype music, more hype music." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna try that. I'm gonna try to make more hype music." And so that's basically what I did, and I needed to find like some way to approach it. So I was thinking, well, I love fighting games. I originally have spent a lot of time in the fighting game community. I was actually a competitive like Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom 3 player for a period of time.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
That's God. It just keeps your accomplishments just keep going and rolling here.
That was always a good time. I really miss those days. So
you took the idea of doing like character, yes, intro music, which I love this idea. I think it's great.
Yeah, and I felt like the characters had so much like personality in terms of how they're visually designed and the way that their abilities sort of color the way that character feels to play. Like, I just felt like there was a lot of unexplored space there, and I wanted to do my best to sort of explore it with music. So I tried to make, you know, Scalebearer's theme was the first one. I tried to make it sound like a marching, stomping sort of thing, because that's what he does. He like charges and stomps and slams into people, and it's like really, you know, brutal and heavy. And so that's what I wanted to do. And so I sort of tried to do something like that for all the characters. And I guess people liked those enough where, I mean, that's the thing that you brought up earlier about community. It's like you don't really have like, you don't look at fans as like this sort of, you know, abstract, nameless mass. It's like the fans almost have like a sense of presence now. Like they are from the Quake community, you know, like these are their interests. This is why they like it. This is why they're into it. You're a part of that community. You know, you're not, it's not like two separate things. Like that was like that's like a big difference, I think, in the old era of sort of, I guess, patronage and like musical fandom, is that before the artist was really sort of separate from their fans. But now in a lot of these situations, at least especially in terms of like, you know, media and like gaming and movies and stuff, the artist is a part of the fandom that is, you know, that the fans are. It's the same thing.
Right. Right.
And so you get like,
it's funny. Yeah. Andrew's very much a good example of that, Holschult, because he's, you know, I follow him on Twitter and I've interviewed him before, and he's just a dude. He's just a fan. I mean, he's part of it. You know, I love that. I love that notion. But anyway, I'm sorry, I jumped in there.
Yeah. This is something that I wanted to do. I wanted to do this, like, you know, do the character themes, not only as A, demonstrate my worth as a musician, but B, to like just sort of like give tribute to a series that I hold so that I hold so dear to my heart. Tongue twister. So yeah, and I'm really proud of that work. And you know, actually, it's the thing about these Dick Champion themes is that every single time I make one, I almost get like a little imposter syndrome vibe, like, oh man, how am I gonna make another one? I'm not gonna be able to make another one. Yeah.
That's funny. Well, I will say I you know, kind of did a kind of retrospective of your stuff this morning and last night. And I mean, your talent really does speak for itself. So if anyone who's listening hasn't checked out his his SoundCloud or his YouTube, you got to go over there. This stuff's great. I love seeing your remixes from Sonic Mayhem, because that soundtrack was, you know, a big part of my life for quite a while. And I just love, you know, I was like sitting here with my headphones on, just rocking out at like 7 this morning. It was great. So yeah, really, really great body of work, even just in this short, you know, few years that you've had now. So Bethesda reached out to you, right? And so how did that go down?
Yeah. So basically what happened was, I had done the Champion themes and Bethesda was aware of them. They gave me like shout outs on their streams and stuff, like, oh, if you guys haven't seen it, go check this out. So they were fans of my music, and I'm friends with them. And they were trying to like, they wanted to work with me, and they were like trying to find like a way. It's like, well, I mean, how could we fit in like more music? Like, what can we do? And so, basically, I don't know 100% who to credit, but I'll say that one of the Bethesda community managers, Tokyo Punch-Out, I don't know if it was his idea, but I'm going to give him the credit for now. He basically was saying, well, we're going to have this Quake Pro League where we're going to have 20 professional Quake players, and they're going to be a part of this like salaried league, and they're going to be playing in all these esports events and stuff. And so we're going to do like a WWE sort of thing almost, where they have like nicknames and stuff, and they'll have like walkout music. And so they asked me like, hey, so we have like a, we have a project if you're down to work with us on it. And if you wanted to score music for the Quake Pro League, which would involve making a main theme for the whole event series, making intermission music for the stream, and then making a player walkout track for every single player in the league. And then I, of course, was like totally down with that. That's I mean, that's also like right in my wheelhouse, right? Like making people's themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, totally. That was awesome. And it's actually still ongoing too, because the way that the league works is every few months, new challengers have a chance to challenge the pros for their spot in the league. And so whenever a challenger qualifies to square off against the pros, they get flown out to a major LAN event where they play, and then they need walkout music and stuff. So, you know, this is still ongoing, and this will be ongoing Quake Pro League until at least QuakeCon of 2020, so sometime in the summer. So this is still, I'm still working on this.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work too. I mean, it sounds like with 20 different themes, intros, outros, that kind of stuff. How long does something like that take you? Like, you get the phone call and you've got to conceptualize it. It's probably different in a lot of cases, but something like that project, how long would it take you?
So for the first batch of music that I had to create, which was about, it was 21 or I think it was 21 or two player intros, and it was the two songs, so the main theme and intermission. So I'm just going to ballpark roughly, you know, 23 different tracks. I had 2 weeks to do that.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So basically the way that I got that done was that I just have a ton of different track or rather session presets that I have made just based off of my previous works. Right. And so this is basically just like almost like a full template session where I have all the instruments in and they're all pre-mixed and everything, or rather pre-mixed by me. And I just need to go and I need to fill it in with new music, change the tempo, and then I make tweaks from there so that they're obviously not the same exact thing as whatever other song that I've done. So that was basically the only way I was able to do that, possibly, because I had to keep in mind, like, doing like 20 plus tracks, and they all sort of had to be different genres and like feel different and sort of like have something to do with the player's name and all this stuff. So it was actually a lot of work, and I was like, I was crunching pretty much for 2 weeks straight on that. But yeah, I got it done. It was actually a really good experience. It was really fulfilling.
It was funny when you sent me your bio and kind of your links and everything. I saw Viscera Fest and Viscera Fest in there.
Yeah.
And I'm familiar with that game from being on RC's channel, GGRC, and RC, you know, is the co-host of QuakeCast as well when he's around. Yeah, so tell me about that, because that's an indie game. It's super striking, you know, visual style, very much a throwback game, but also has a lot of modern kind of sensibilities, we'll say. How did that come about?
So that can also be attributed to my Quake Champions themes, my character themes. Mm-hmm. So the developer of Viscera Fest, or Osric, I think is his handle. He, I guess, was browsing the Quake Champions subreddit, maybe, and he saw like me posting one of my champion themes on there, and then he contacted me and was like, "Hey, do you want to? I'm working on this game. Here's a video of it. Do you want to? You know, are you down to be hired to make some music for it?" And I watched the video and I was like, "Wow, this looks really cool. Like, yeah, definitely. Like, I want to be a part of that." And so I started working on music for the game, and the game was in a completely different state than it is now. There was like a completely different engine. There were less people working on it. All this stuff. It was in a lot more of a primitive state than it is now. And so I started making music for it. And it's the game sort of structurally is a lot like Quake 1 in the sense that there's a hub and then you pick what chapter you want to play. And there are a linear set of handmade levels. So I started working on level music, and then the sound was sort of like, you know, the developer, the main developer, it's a one-man operation, was doing everything, including the sound. And I was like, hey, you know, like these sounds that you have in the game, like they don't really fit with the music in terms of like their production quality. Like maybe, you know, I can make like a few gun sounds and stuff and we'll try that out and see how they fit. And so I started making gun sounds, and then, you know, they were nice, or he liked them. And I started just making, you know, more sounds here and there, more there, until it sort of just like snowballed into, well, I'm now the lead sound designer for the game. And I'm really actually having an absolute blast making or designing sound for that game. I might even enjoy designing sounds more than making music, just because it's like, it's just like you get like the one-off enjoyment, like, oh, I need to make a gunshot, and then you make the gunshot and then you're done, and it's like you ship it off and it's like completed. You know, it's just, it feels, it's nice, and you constantly have these moments with sound design and you're constantly doing really different things. So I find like it's really creatively rewarding, a lot more rewarding than like, well, I can't say it's more rewarding than music. That's hard, because music is like you create this like, It's a lot larger body of work than like a single sound effect, and it's consumed much more intently than a sound effect is. So it's different, but I guess it's only fair to say that they're rewarding in their own right, and sound design is really fun and awesome to do. And yeah, the game is shaping up really nicely.
Yeah, I haven't played. I played a very old build, so yeah, obviously it's grown a lot since then. It looks great. And I will say that, you know, for the longest time, that's what I wanted to do with sound design. I just was so inspired by, I went to this demo of Dolby Surround Sound years ago. Gosh, I don't even know how long ago, but it was at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, and they did an entire reel of Raiders of the Lost Ark where they would play, they just played the soundtrack, right? The 6-track sound design portion of it. So no music, no dialogue. And then they spoke about how they created everything. And from that point on, I was just obsessed with sound design. And that was always one of those things, like, I wish I had kind of pursued this, because it is fun. I've done a little bit of it just for my own little projects. And then I did a couple sound things for minor add-ons and things like that. But it was so much fun. So I totally understand what you're saying, because it's quick. You know, you could do something and spend a day on it, or you could spend 15 minutes or 5 minutes, and
yeah,
it's just as satisfying. And, you know, making music, you're just putting all those ingredients together into a larger piece. So it's,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the workflow is similar. So
for sound, like I would say the biggest difference between sound and music is that there's still a lot of times there's like a sense of wonder to me when it comes to sound design, just because music, I've done it for so long where if I need to, I can work by formula, and I can make competent, digestible music by formula. But like sound is like, it's like the Wild West. Like there's like so much strange stuff that you sometimes have to do to get what you want. And it's always so interesting. There's like to just like sit and like scratch my head at, you know, on my DAW, or digital audio workspace. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, how do I do this? And I'll just like mess around with different stuff. Maybe I'll poke around online. But then like once I like put the pieces together and I execute something, like, oh man, there's no feeling like that.
So very much, you know, content creation is very similar to gaming in that respect, because you have that reward, you know, feedback loop or whatever, where you're getting high on your own creation, but especially when other people react to it, that's the icing on the cake for me anyway, when I have projects.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool. So where to next? You've got this explosion of activity, and you've got a community, a growing community. I just joined your Discord, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Marquee Music Studios, if in case people are listening, I'll have links. But so what's next? What's the next challenge? Is it just more sound design and more music, both?
Yeah. So I did a fair amount of work for the upcoming Arena FPS Diabotical.
Oh, that's right.
And so that is in closed beta testing right now. And so the work that I did for Diabotical was power-up music. Basically, in Diabotical, like what is in Quake the quad damage, in Diabotical is called the Diabotical power-up. And so when you pick it up, it gives you triple damage, and it plays music out of your player character. And so, you know, you hear the music. Other players in the game can positionally hear your music as you're going around the map fragging everybody, right? So it's like run away from the song, right? Or chase the song. And so this is a customizable element in the game. So everybody can pick what song they want. And I made like 30 so far, 30 different power-up themes ranging from like every genre I could think of. I have like metal, I have industrial. I've collaborated with some Quake mapping community members too. I did a track with Smilescythe.
Nice.
Yeah, industrial, EDM, hardstyle, death metal, djent, like every genre I could possibly think of. I tried to have something for everybody. So that is not in the closed beta yet, so people haven't quite been exposed to it. So that's going to be happening somewhat soon. I'm excited for that. And yeah, I'm still working on Viscera Fest. There's still a lot to do in that game, as we've only really done the bulk of the work on the first episode of three. And yeah, I'm doing music for that game. I'm doing all these sound effects. I'm voicing monsters and some characters. There are other voice actors as well. Like I have to like sort of like coach them through lines. All this stuff. So Viscera Fest is a thing. And yeah, some other unannounced projects here and there.
That's good. That's great.
And of course, mapping. That's my passion at the moment.
That's what I was going to say. You know, you started back with Doom 3 Ed, I will say, actually.
Yeah.
And you gave up on it, but now you're back. And it's funny. I am really embarrassed to say I haven't played your levels, and I really should have done that before we talked. So I'm very sorry, and I will play them.
There's still time.
Yeah. So now you have two levels, or are you?
So are officially released, I only have one official release. Oh, okay. And it's a remake of E1M1 of Viscera Fest, except done in a Quake base theme. And so I released that as it's an Arcane Dimensions level. Mm-hmm. And I've started, you know, levels here and there and scrapped them, or, you know, set them aside as scraps. And just cause I've been learning a lot, as I map and I need to restart. And right now I'm actually working on what I hope to be my second official release, which is, a sort of spiritual homage to, Azure Agony E4 M7. Which I'm calling Cobalt Cacophony, because you need to have a color right. Alliteration.
Right.
And
that's great. I'm looking at a little gift that you had on your Twitter today. So it's looking good. Looking great.
So, and I have to thank you personally for this, because mapping has become like a main recreational activity for me. It's like super meditative for me. You know, if I need to just like clear my mind, I can always just, you know, fire up Trench Broom. And, you know, if ever having a crappy day, it's just, it always helps me out. And I was only able to do it because of your tutorials too.
Oh, well, thank you. You're welcome. I'm happy. You know, I love, you know, I think everybody likes getting positive feedback, but as I've said many times on the show, it's like, I literally thought it was going to be a couple dozen people, like, you know, mapping for Quake. And so it's super satisfying, especially people that have tried mapping or mapped before and came back, because that's me. That's basically, you know, I started mapping with Doom 2, basically, but didn't have a lot of success and nothing of note. And so it's really, you know, satisfying as someone who's a bit older and who's been around to have people come back and say, hey, I'm mapping because of your tutorial is so satisfying. So happy that they're helpful, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I also kind of want to like give back as much as I can to this community as well. Like I made that like a sound pack of ambient sounds. Like it was like over 80 ambient sounds that I released, and I put it on Funk message board and the Quake mapping Discord, of course. Mm-hmm. And I have been, you know, I'm talking to Bal and Heresy about doing some tracks for some of the levels that they're working on.
Nice.
So that should be fun.
That's great. And again, my bad. I haven't even downloaded that pack yet. but that's great. You know, I mean, the problem with it is you have to use a mod. So that's kind of the, I think you sound, you know, with the Quake community and the Quake scene, things are changing. But for the longest time, sound was just it's just an afterthought. I mean, maybe get a custom track. But as far as ambient sounds and things like that, your pack is like the kind of one of the first of its kind that I've seen in the last, 5 years of being back in the community. So that's great. I mean, I'll have links to that below because a lot of the people from the mapping scene are might have missed that.
So, yeah. As someone who's worked as it's my job to in a lot of senses to make ambient sounds for games and stuff. I have to say that proper implementation of like a soundscape or ambient sounds and all this stuff provides a generational leap in terms of like immersion or like creating a sense of space in your map. It's as important as picking the right texture for a wall is like picking the right sound for the space. 'Cause
I agree.
I don't feel like you can neglect your ears, and you shouldn't just use the stock ambience that the Quake 1 skybox gives you, or the water, right? So I feel like it's crazy how much of a difference it makes in terms of how your map feels to just stand in, let alone play.
Right, I agree. And that's one thing that Arcane Dimensions did so well from the beginning. You know, you have the ambient and spooky sounds and all that stuff. So they did a great job, and again, people don't really, it doesn't register to people. It's just there. I mean, I notice it, you know, because I'm keyed into that stuff, but the better it is, the better your map is going to be. So
yeah, I'm trying to trumpet that. I'm trying to be like, hey guys, ambient sounds, come on, let's do it.
Yeah. In fact, I did, you know, I have that mod progs dump, yeah. and literally the first thing that I think the first thing was trigger spawn monster. And the second was like as many sound entities as I could find, you know, from Rubicon Rumble Pack and let's see, the mission packs and things like that. So there's like three different sound entities that I added in there. It's so ironic because I did this thing for myself really and shared it with people, but I haven't made any projects except for my sample maps. It's really frustrating. Yeah. It's like, I really want to stop working on this so I can actually do what I was started on. That's how it goes. That's how it goes with the custom content creation. So
yeah, a lot of times you have to serve yourself first. Mm-hmm. And then, a lot of times, rather, you inadvertently serve other people when just trying to serve yourself.
Right.
This is what happens to me a lot.
Yeah. And that's a good thing too. I mean, you know, I wouldn't give up, you know, my channel or Quakecast, and, you know, I really enjoy mapping, but I don't map very often. That's the irony of all this stuff, but it's fun to be involved with the community and talk to people like yourself. And I spoke with Ivar from Core Decay earlier today, and that episode will have already probably aired by the time we get to this, but it's just great to be involved, you know, so it doesn't matter if I'm outputting anything. It's nice to be involved with the community.
Mm-hmm. So one other thing I wanted to mention as far as like when I first brought up like giving back to the community was I had an idea for a series of like YouTube videos where it would be almost like handheld mapping, because this is something that I benefit from greatly as I learn, is like I learn through imitation. That's like my strongest sense of learning, I guess. So what I thought would be interesting to do was to create like a video where I design a starting room for a map, and I create a bunch of like prefabbed, you know, just like brush based, just art decoration stuff. And I'll set some groundworks, like you use these for the floor textures, you use these for the ceilings, these for the walls, okay? And I'll create the starting room, I'll create all these assets, I'll put them off to the side so you can copy paste them around and use them, and go make a map with this. And I thought that that would be really cool. And this would obviously be piggybacking off of your tutorials, because you would need to watch your tutorials to learn how to use Trench Broom. And yeah, this is something that I wish I had available from the start to me, just to like really sort of get rid of all of my like, you know, bad habits or early mistakes that I'll make, and just sort of iron everything out at the beginning. And I thought that would be like really interesting and fun to do, like basically just set up a prefab or like a preset for a player to build a map off of, to try to get more people into the community.
Yeah, I think you should do that. I mean, that's a very worthwhile thing. And, you know, if there's anything I can do to help, or, you know, kind of get the word out, or, you know, give you assistance, let me know.
Yeah,
I try to fit you in.
I feel like the biggest hangup that new players have when they're trying to approach making a map, at least this is what I see most consistently as in like screenshot submissions of like newer mappers, is they don't quite yet have like a grasp on scale and like the sort of unwritten rules of mapping, like, you know, using the right textures for the right things, you know, not have, you know, right, making sure buttons use button textures, making sure, you know, just like things like that. And I feel like these like rules are like important. It's important, or rather it's really helpful, to establish a set of rules for a new mapper and then force them to work within that set of rules.
Right. And I will say that that's been on my, I don't want to even say to-do list, because I did start working on it, but I started a video, or started a script for a video called, you know, the X number of things you shouldn't do as a beginner. And what happened was I started looking at all the real common things and the common mistakes and everything. And I started writing the script, and then I timed out just the first section, and it was like 7 minutes long, just that first section. So this is going to be a monster project. So I actually did start that, and scale is one of the things that I was talking about. The number one thing, is, I mean, there's also compiling issues that everybody has, because it's just so weird, you know, depending on
a little archaic.
Yeah, it's definitely archaic. And it's kind of like, what you mean, I can't just hit a button and it works, you know, there's troubleshooting involved. But yeah, scale was probably the first thing. People either make these huge levels because they think it's Doom and you could just do whatever you want, whereas like, no, don't do that.
Or they make levels too small and then the monster AI breaks.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, that's all part of that. So I don't have a timeline for that, but the script is definitely in production. And I'm, because I do things two different ways. Sometimes I'll just kind of sit down and record something, and then I'll edit all the ums and ahs out. And then other ones, it's a little better to write scripts and really organize my thoughts. So that's why this one's taking so long. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we should chat offline on this. I'll let you know what I'm up to.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, definitely. So, okay. So you have a cat.
Yes.
Named Libby? Libby?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Has Libby inspired any of your music at all? Or has she been in any recordings?
No. See, so that's funny that you bring up recording immediately. Because people, whenever I'm streaming or I'm in Discord with them, like a voice chat, she's just in the background the entire time, like nonstop, and she screams like a baby. Like, there have been legit times where people have thought there was a crying baby in my room. And so the it's funny that you bring up recording her, is because every single time I put a microphone in front of her face, she just shuts up. She just like silent.
It's completely funny. Silent.
I cannot record her for the life of me.
You have to sneak up behind her like you should with any cat, right?
Yeah. And thankfully, you know, during this podcast, she's just asleep. So we lucked out.
She's crashing out. Huh? That's awesome. And so you also said that your parents are Russian and you speak fluent Russian. I'm going to ask you to do some bumpers in a minute in Russian, but tell me a little bit about that. I mean, that's amazing. You know,
yeah. So my parents, immigrated from the Soviet Union in 1988, I want to say. And so I was actually the first in my family to be born in America. But considering that my parents were Russian immigrants, Russian was actually my first language. So I actually learned English by watching TV, strangely enough. That was like the first words of English I learned was through TV. And then, of course, I went to public school in the United States, and you know, the rest, I had a pretty normal upbringing. I speak Russian, but considering I sort of stopped learning it as a child, I basically have the Russian of like a 10-year-old. So like, imagine how like a 10-year-old child is like fluent in English. That's like me in Russian. So I can like hold any conversation that I need to, but the second things start getting technical, like I'm just like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what part of the car that is.
You know? That's funny. So you know poopy and peepee and stuff like that.
No. I mean, I
like boogers and you know, some 10-year-olds.
10-year-olds are still in diapers, right?
No. I mean like peepee jokes or poopy jokes.
Yeah. No. I mean, like,
I'm trying to be funny.
In terms of like my like, you know, I guess what the right word is, like scientific vocabulary, right? It's like sort of lacking. I can't, you know, I don't know how to describe each and every component of a car or like, you know, all these like, you know, small little more complex things. But in general, like my conversational Russian is pretty strong.
So now do you have like, what's that Russian instrument that's like?
Balalaika?
Balalaika, yeah. Do you have one of those? You play, you sit back and rock out on that?
I have like a mini toy one, but I do not have a real one.
That's cool. I love that.
Yeah, I have way too many guitars already as it is.
Right.
And I have a banjo. That's cool.
And a banjo, right? Yeah. On. Well, we're gonna have to do a kind of a swamp theme or something, and have you do
some deliverance music.
Yeah, deliverance music, exactly. Oh, that's great.
With the fishing auger, well, it's perfect.
Exactly. Oh man. Well, so Quake Mapper musician, career's taken off. Game musician, game composer, I should say. Yeah, I'm really happy for you, and I'm a fan. Especially after just going through this survey of all your music in the last 12 hours, really great stuff. And, you know, I'll extend the invitation anytime you want to come back on the show and talk about it, your new projects or things you're working on. Happy to have you back. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure being here. This is a great time.
That's it for episode 49. Thanks to Michael for joining us and for providing this awesome new show music. You can find him and all his activities in the show notes. And you can find me on YouTube. Just search for dumptruck_DS. Thanks again. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.